Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 436th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments to get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Once the Metro and the rest of the SB Nation family of soccer websites. Come on in. Chat room is open. If you like to talk amongst yourselves, it's okay. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability. Before we begin to review the conference semifinals, I would like to talk about a man that has been a staple of this match, of this game in this country, in our nation's capital, since the beginning of this league in 1996 in Major League Soccer. Of course, he has done other soccer events as well. He has done indoor soccer, and he probably has done some college soccer. And he has also called a couple of national games back in the day when it was Fox Soccer Channel. But he is also the sports director in Washington, D.C. for WTOP. He is also the radio voice in the NBA of the Washington Wizards, and he is also on television in the local D.C., Washington, D.C. area for the NBC station in our nation's capital. That man that we all know and love, his name is, of course, Dave Johnson. Dave Johnson has been calling D.C. United matches. He has been a lifelong broadcast announcer for this game in American soccer. In my book, just as JP Della Camera has been given the opportunity to come into the National Soccer Hall of Fame in Frisco, Texas, in my book, this man also deserves his due in the media wing of our National Soccer Hall of Fame. He also deserves to be put into that building as well. Some news, of course, has broken through the national media down in Washington, D.C., of course, local media as well, that has been a little bit sad, but the man that we all know and love with his catchphrase, "It's in the net." It's in the net. And that is, of course, the one and only Dave Johnson. The sad thing that has happened to Mr. Johnson is that he has been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. We all know what MS has done to people. That has been a very terrifying and terrible disease. And, you know, you hope and pray that this man can get through this terrible feeling that he has. And he has seen it happen to loved ones, of course, as he was, on this article locally of WTOP.com, the radio station he works for. It was, and it has affected his mother back in the day, unfortunately. And, you know, what I love about Dave Johnson, and I'm not saying this to sound like, you know, this is it, this is the end of him. No, it's not the end of him. We all know he's going to fight this. We all know that he's going to, you know, stick his studs into the pitch and he's going to attack it like he's attacked everything else. we know that he's going to fight this, and he's going to fight this hard. Because this is a man, in my opinion, one of the best voices for the game in this country, nationally as well as locally. And every time I go to the league website, I go to listen to at least a goal call from him. Because why? Because this man has done it for a long, long time. This man has been the face of the game in the Washington, D.C., Southern Maryland, Northern Virginia area, the tri-state area of Washington, D.C. This is a man I've met many, many times, whether he was in Red Bull Arena covering D.C. United against the New York Red Bulls, or whenever I have traveled to Audi Field. The last time I saw him face-to-face was the last season, the 3-3 draw, before the 3-3 draw against the Red Bulls down at Audi Field, at the new home of DC United, of course. And, you know, talking to him, you know, coming in and having conversation with him, and having him on my show, of course, talking about the club, talking about moving out of RFK and coming to finally to Audi Field to finally say, this is their stadium, this is their home, this is the place where DC United is going to be making new history, new memories, and everything else that you want to see in a stadium that is growing soccer in our nation's capital and the surrounding states. And, you know, it is sad that he has it, but if you know him very well, and, you know, I don't know him very well, but the truth is, I know of him, and I know how funny he is, and I know how strong he is, that he will fight this, and I believe he will be victorious in this. He'll get the full 3 points on this one. That's what I truly believe. This is a man who has been successful in everything, and everything he has done in the local D.C. area. He's very funny. I remember him because I do follow him on Twitter. And apparently, he had this video on his Twitter page where the sports reporters or the sports broadcasters for the local NBC affiliate, it was like a brand new lineup, new people. Of course, he is the top dog in all of it. And they play, you know, hype music, you know, pump up music to introduce First, the new players in the game for the local NBC affiliate in Washington, D.C. And then here comes Dave Johnson, which I thought he was going to limbo his way into that office, but, you know, there was no limbo stick to dance below. But still, though, I had a laugh, and it's a great laugh, because this man has done so many wonderful things. You know, great stories that he's told, wonderful conversations I've had with him in the past. But once again, it is a situation where and it's very true what they say. Because, you know, I think about my own father, who I recently lost 3 months ago to Parkinson's. Because in my book, he didn't deserve that fate. He didn't deserve that ending because he was a good man, my father. He showed you respect, and at the same time, he wanted respect back. Why is it, as I was told, why is it that God always has to take away the good people from us? Dave Johnson is good people. Dave Johnson is excellent. From the article from WTOP, the quote, he found out that he had this disease, he says, "I had an inkling it might be MS. The more they asked me to take tests and MRIs," Dave Johnson said, "I started to think back to the symptoms my mother had. curling of my big toe, and I started to notice my hand movements were similar to hers. You know, all you can hope for, all you want, is to just take this man by the shoulder, pull him into the corner, and just say to him, you know, you've meant a lot to this game. You've meant a lot to making great calls. Maybe you should take a break, but you know what? Knowing him in some ways, I don't think he's going to do that. He's going to lace up his boots. He's going to put on his kit. And he'll have his headband on. He'll be dribbling that basketball for the Washington Wizards. He'll be dribbling that little soccer ball, that football for DC United. He's going to go and attack it. He's going to go and tell it to get out of my system. Never, ever bother me again. This man that I'm lucky, to be honest with you, I am lucky, very, very lucky to have had conversations with him, to have, you know, to call him a colleague at least, and, you know, just to be in the same building with him is an honor. Whether you know it or not, as a DC United supporter, and obviously you know it because you've listened to him on the road, you've listened to him call matches for DC United, everything he has done for the club, you know that he is someone that's very special. And sometimes the local regional voices don't get enough credit outside of their market. Well, this is why I'm here, to give him the credit that he truly deserves. Because this man, in my book, deserves to be recognized in the National Soccer Hall of Fame. You know, JP Telecameron earned it. There are other great voices right now in my book that deserve to go in there in the media and print wing of the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And I would be the first one to sign a ballot, or at least to sign a petition, and have him be put into the National Soccer Hall of Fame down in Frisco, Texas, just part of Toyota Stadium at the home of FC Dallas. And as we finish up with this intro monologue, and I know he's listening, or if he is not listening live, he's already probably calling a Washington Wizards basketball game right now. Hopefully he'll get to it whenever he can. Dave, on behalf of myself, I just want to say this to you, is that you, sir, are a true treasure of a broadcaster. You've done it for so many years, and the first time I've ever heard you, it's funny. It wasn't an MLS match. It wasn't a DC United match. It wasn't anything that you can catch on a replay or on YouTube. The first time I heard you, Dave, was an indoor soccer league match that was broadcasted on ESPN a couple of years before MLS was born. And when you threw out that phrase, like you always do when there's a goal scored, it's in the net, it's in the net, it's a big goal, it's in the net. That's the exact call that he did for an indoor soccer league match. And even though, I'll be honest, I don't remember the teams that played in it, all I remembered was this guy has got passion for the game. Even though it's an indoor game, this man truly deserves our respect, and he deserves a lot of respect. And I'm telling you right now, folks. I'm telling you right now. This man truly deserves all of our respect as the voice of DC United. And at the same time, a wonderful human being. Dave Johnson, thank you so much for everything you do for the game of soccer, the game of football in this country. And may you keep on going, sir. You're going to beat it. I know you will. And I am here for you. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we review the semifinals, the conference semifinals of the 2019 MLS Cup playoffs. We start off first things first up in Canada, in Toronto. Dwayne Rollins, 24th Minute Blog, Soccer Today, part of the Sports Podcasting Network with Kevin Laramie. A 2-1 victory over New York City FC at Citi Field. And it was a huge win for Toronto as they will now move on to the conference finals down in Atlanta, Georgia. Dwayne, how are you? And, you know, you had plenty of confidence in that matchup against New York City FC, not at Yankee Stadium, but at Citi Field, the home of the New York Mets. Gotta say it, that was a big match, a big win, and Toronto is flying high right now.
I think what I would have said last week was that experience would matter in these one game offs, and this is a team in Toronto FC that not too long ago was flying high and was winning MLS Cup, back-to-back MLS Cup final appearances, and sure enough, they did just enough on the night. Now, what we didn't anticipate was that Omar Gonzalez and of course, Jose Altidor would both be missing it, and they'd still be able to get a performance in, breathing, on their last breath, so to speak, because they were completely tired by that the end of that second half. The fact that they were able to hold on after NYCFC had tied things up is a testament to desire as much as anything else, I think, which is a hard thing to quantify, of course, but it was a bit surprising that they were able to do so because they did look like they were running on fumes at the end, but they get that late penalty. People talk all they want about New York giving it up. Richie Larrea with a nice little move along the wing and then forcing someone to make a mistake there. He deserves credit for that as well. And he's had a great couple of weeks performing for Canada as well, of course. So it's anyone's game now. TFC has come a long way in a couple months because we were having conversations in June about this club being, whether they needed to fire Vanny and whether they needed to start the rebuilding process immediately. And instead, as I just said, they're now, a 2-game winning streak away from standing in the Cazzetti again.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I got to say, to me in that first half, because many people thought, okay, here comes New York City FC. They're going to fire everything on all cylinders. They're going to give Toronto a game. And the truth of the matter is, I don't think they gave you guys a game at all. I mean, to be honest, I thought Toronto should have been at least one goal, two goals ahead in the opening 45. And then I don't know what Vanny said, but he got Toronto back on track and Pozuelo was able to get you that opening goal 2 minutes after the restart of the match.
Well, Greg Vanny has been, and this has been the top coaching performance of Greg Vanny's career in my mind the last two games. He has been able to take a injured, tired, and on older legs TFC team and squeezed a little bit more energy out of this veteran group to get them this close to a championship. And it's going to be tough to get from this point forward, but any doubts about his ability to lead this team into 2020 are well gone. Now, no one's talking about that. He's done very well in setting things up to get them into the position that they are. Tactically speaking, they went out to do what I suggested last week, to punch them in the mouth early and try and get something up. They were unlucky, as you said, not to be ahead in that first half. And then, of course, they get the quick goal on the mistake at the start of the second half, and then things changed at that point. But TFC, with a week's rest now, we don't know what Josie's status are. We think Gonzalez is probably better or ready to go. They were both listed at day-to-day last week at this time. That's the last update we've really gotten. Puncher's chance, right? To use an old cliche.
Mm-hmm.
And that's That's what they've got themselves in position. And now we're at the point where the experience matters. But then again, you know, you've got your 2016 champion, the 2017 champion, the 2018 champion, or well, I'm getting these years wrong, am I not? No, and now here we are in 2019 with the best team in the league that's still in there. So you can't, if you're MLS, you can't hope for a better matchup than this in the Final Four. But as I said, it's gravy at this point. But, you know, Miles Robinson ruled out today, so everyone's kind of beat up at this point. If you're TFC and if you're that veteran core, you've just got to look at this and go, what the hell? Why not us?
No, absolutely. And as always, this is going to be a tough matchup with Atlanta United. I know Atlanta has had slow starts in this playoff series so far, or should I say in these playoff rounds. I mean, slow start against New England, who, you know, Bruce Arena is going to Bruce Arena, and then you have the Union coming in, and they just find a way, Atlanta, to get those big goals late in matches to, you know, do some damage. What similarities or differences are you seeing with this matchup now coming up between Toronto and Atlanta?
Well, I think tactically speaking, TFC has to do a similar thing than they did with NYCFC. If you look at Atlanta and what are their strengths? Their strength, as you say, is their ability to grind through and to get things done. In the last two playoffs, not just the last two games, but you know, include the MLS Cup Championship last year, it's a team that kind of reinvented itself a little and played a little tighter and a little more disciplined in the playoffs. And certainly with the injuries that they've had in the back line of their own, they've had to be forced to do that again. But that said, I think if you're TFC, particularly if Josie's healthy, and I'm not completely hopeful, not to be candid, but if he is, you particularly have to look at that as a vulnerability that has to be exposed. The rest is not as much of an issue as it was last week. That was a huge problem with TFC. They were coming not just two games in 8 days. They were playing essentially four games in 12 days when you include the international break and some of the key components to TFC playing in that game as well. So it was a massive big deal for them to have this week off. And now with Atlanta, you know, having played the same amount of playoff games as TFC going into this, you know, not having the advantage of that bye, that takes that a bit out. So I think you just get right on the front foot again. You know, TFC's never been particularly known over the past 18 months as a defensively solid team. If Gonzalez is in there, they're better. But this is a team that's going to win based on producing offense, based on getting things out of Pozuelo, based on getting you know, the ball through that midfield and winning the ball there in good positions to start that counter. Where they're vulnerable is on the break. They lack team speed. We saw it in NYCFC when they were rolling in the second half. They were getting caught out a little bit. They were getting some uneven breaks coming at them. Extra man to men charging through the midfield after a turnover there when they were a little bit tired. So if you get on the front foot, if you possess the ball, then you can avoid that to a certain extent. And that's what TFC has to do to finish this off. And, you know, are they underdogs? Yeah, they're on the road. But this is a compelling game to me. I have to think neutrals would have a little bit of trouble handicapping this one. It's hard to say what's going to happen here. It's not quite like the other match where I think there's a clear favorite.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I don't think no one's going to know who's going to be the clear favorite here. Just to remind us, what is Josie's injury again? That for those of us that are not aware of it, was it a muscle, leg pull, or a hamstring? What was it?
In the game against Columbus, there was kind of an awkward tackle in the box, and Josie went down awkwardly, came up clutching his hamstring, which is a problem that he's had throughout his career, as we well know. So, yeah, it didn't. He walked off on his own steam that day. So it's not some major pull, but I think it is tweaked to this point, and they're afraid that if they push it too far, that he will be unable to complete it all. But when you compare this to the MLS Cup run in 2017, where we found out later he was essentially playing on one leg, that tells me that there's something significant about this that's not playing him at all. That means that he probably lacks strength, the ability to cut and to do things he could. It wouldn't shock me from what I've been hearing that Josie will be on the bench for this game, will not start, will be very cagey about telling us where he stands to allow, you know, a decoy, so to speak. But if they can get away with not playing him at all, then they're going to do so. And, you know, so far, Pozuelo playing the false nine, done good work in the midfield. Rosario's had a hell of a playoffs. Michael Bradley's looked a few years younger in this run, is really solidifying that midfield. Marky Delgado hasn't played this well in a couple years. They might think they can get away with this for another week, and then you have a long break until the MLS Cup final, and you would hope that you would have all your horses at that point.
No, absolutely. I think that's the big thing for Toronto right now. Try and get to the final. Try and find a way to beat Atlanta, and then, of course, you know, get that nice bye week, and then you get ready for the final, and why not? Toronto seems to be very confident out there. They look like that they're able to I'll say it. There's a possibility for an upset, and I think they are ready to, and they feel they're ripe enough to get Atlanta and upset them.
For sure. I mean, they're a confident group. 2018 was a bit of an outlier, and you consider the CCL run in that, in the spring of that. If you consider that, if you think back to that, Toronto has now been, if they were to make the MLS Cup final this time, to four finals in 4 years, which is a remarkable string of games for any MLS team, of course. But That levels a certain level of confidence and even cockiness at times that they believed, and they always have believed all year, that if they could just find the right rhythm at the right time, they could be a championship contending team. A lot of people laughed at them back in the early part of the summer, but they're proven to be geniuses here when it comes to it, because you can't argue it now. They're a championship contending team. They're two wins away.
Absolutely. Did you find it strange that Dome Torrent only made one substitution in this match, putting in Hebert for Keaton Parks in the 60th minute, where Vanney just threw all three subs out? Do you feel maybe Vanney outcoached Dome in this one, or do you think that Dome he just wanted to ride roughshod all over the place and give the rest of the side that opportunity to win this match?
I think Dome did well for changing the tactics around at the start of the second half, which allowed, the mistake aside, that's a bit of a strange thing that this half started. It was mostly NYCFC for the first 30 minutes of that second half. That, I think, is up to do with the tactical changes that he made at halftime and taking advantage of a tired Toronto team. But, yeah, you would think that if you are aware of that Toronto is, running on fumes, as I said earlier, that you might want to force the issue a little bit further and get some pressure legs out there to take advantage of that even more. As I said before, I'm not going to criticize another coach, but I will praise Greg Vanney's approach to these playoffs. He has figured a system out. When you look at TFC and the experts all agreed they can't win without Josie. That was one of the most definitive statements said across the board and the previews of MLS Cup playoffs. And while Greg Vanney's proven them wrong, they're winning without Josie Altidore. And that's a significant coaching win for Vanney. As I said, I've been very impressed with him the last couple of weeks, and any doubts about his future are well past now.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I would say the same thing back in the day. Look, if you have Josie, in the starting 11 every single match, and he gives you the best chance to win, I would have said the same thing. I would have said, look, they can't win without him. You got to go out there. You got to make sure that your side goes out and gets a win, gets a victory with him on the field. But right now, I agree with you. Vanny's pushing the right buttons. He's pulling the right strings. Then don't argue with it. Keep on going, and keep on finding ways to get wins. Why not?
Yeah, it'll only take one. To me, Gonzalez is the more important. It sounds silly to say. Obviously, a healthy Josie Altidore would be very important. And in fact, I would go so far to say if a healthy Josie Altidore was in this, I'd put them, I would put them as a slight favorite based on their experience, in my opinion. I'm probably biased when I say that, but I would at least put them as an equal favorite. But Gonzalez is, to me, the key. If he's healthy, and I think he is, by all accounts, he was very close to being ready for the New York game, and they just held him out because they were happy with the way that they had played previous and thought they're a little bit confident that they'd get the win, so more rest would help them. But I think that when you have Jose Martinez out there, you're going to need all the help you can get at the back to try and prevent him from doing stuff like he did at the end of the Philly game with that wonder goal from, 35 yards on a straight line, which was a thing of beauty to watch in the last round.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, Dwayne, thank you very much for your time. Good luck against Atlanta I believe it is Wednesday night?
Wednesday
night?
Yeah,
Tuesday
Wednesday.
Night? Wednesday night.
Wednesday.
So you have to wait an extra day.
All right. Bye.
All right. Take care, Dwayne. Bye-bye. That's Dwayne Rollins, 24th Minute Blog. Also, don't forget as well as Soccer Today with Kevin Laramie, part of the Sports Podcasting Network over in Canada, Montreal and Toronto, as they go on out there and they find a way. Atlanta, you know, Toronto's going to take on Atlanta. This is going to be a huge, huge match. Probably one of the bigger matches for Toronto in the current situation that they're in. So it's going to be one of those things where Toronto has to be extra careful now, because there's going to be a lot of fighting, a lot of big, big moments here. Toronto right now, it's red hot. Don't God play it safe. Can't play it safe. You got to go after it, and you got to attack it. It's going to be over at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Joining me right now, a gentleman that has seen a lot of Atlanta championships already in 2 years, two out of the last three right now. Of course, an Open Cup title, MLS Cup championship, the defending MLS Cup champions in Atlanta United. Yeah. Defeating the Philadelphia Union by a final of 2-0. The one and only Jason Longshore, the radio analyst for Atlanta United for 92.9 FM, The Game. Jay, I got to say, this is a match where Atlanta, they finally get a goal in the opening 45. They played some solid defense in the middle, and then they finished them off with 10 minutes to spare in regulation time.
It was a strong performance. I mean, a difficult one because you have a number of injuries that you're struggling with when it comes to Atlanta's back line. And it was a lineup that saw Florentine Pogba and Mikey Ambrose together on the left side of it, which was very unexpected. But Atlanta gets the early goal. That was the key here. And going up against the Philadelphia team that had played 120 minutes the previous round, you knew that was going to have an effect, and an early goal was critical. And Atlanta got that and then got one late to finish it off and were able to move on.
I was actually shocked that Philadelphia put Alejandro Bedoya out there. I mean, I know he's the captain of the squad. I know he's the very important player to them. But because of his calf injury, I really thought that they were going to at least give him a break, or you know, maybe bring him in as a substitute. No, he went out there, and I mean, was he struggling? Because I thought maybe Atlanta
okay.
would take advantage of that situation. Yeah.
Yeah, he was okay. I think Philly was pretty good in the 4-4-2 diamond, and Bedoya was part of it, and that was able to give him a little bit more protection. But when they moved to the 4-2-3-1, when they brought on Ilsenio, and it's a move you have to make if you're the Philadelphia Union. It's been successful. It was successful against the Red Bulls. It opened up the midfield more, and Atlanta was then, with a 1-0 lead, able to possess the ball in longer stretches, which wore out Bedoya, but also wore out the rest of the squad. And I think that's where the game turned, because in the 4-4-2 diamond, he's not as exposed. In that 4-2-3-1, he's much more exposed, and it just – he didn't have the legs. I don't think the team as a group had the legs, and Atlanta, it's a better team. Even with the injuries that Atlanta was dealing with, they were a better team, especially in the attack, and when you get an early goal at home, more often than not, you're going to find a way through.
I think that's what really – even though, like you said it, like at halftime, Jim Curtin switched the formation around to try to get, I guess, more length down the wings – in the midfield. And like you said, you know, it exposed a couple of players on Philadelphia to change that formation. But to me, even though you're bringing in Ilsenio for Philly, I just thought, like you said, that really played into the hands of Atlanta United. And Frank de Boer, I think when he recognized what he saw, he told everyone on the pitch, go after it, challenge them, take them out, find a way to get that ball into the back of the net. And while obviously Andre Blake had a howler of a match against the Red Bulls, you know, I just feel like he – I mean, he looked okay in this one, but I just – I don't know. To me, Andre Blake has lost a little something right now, because the only way that he can get protection is that back line when you are changing formations. Because if you're going with a 4-4-2, and as you said, that midfield diamond, he looked terrible, absolutely terrible in that first half against the Red Bulls in the last round. And I just don't think they had enough protection for him.
Yeah, I just think they're a team that still needs a little more. I think Philadelphia's got a great base. I think Jim Curtin is a very good manager. I just don't think they had enough options here. And when you look at the top teams in this league, outside of LAFC, who has a very identifiable way that they play, and they stick to it no matter what, Atlanta will mix things up. We saw it in this one. They started with four in the back for the first time in a long time. But they can play a 3-5-2 as well. Toronto has a very interesting wrinkle with Alejandro Pozuelo as a false nine, as opposed to Jozy Altidore, who is about as traditional of a nine as you're going to find. I think the best teams in the league have different ways to play to solve problems. I think Philadelphia was pretty predictable, and I'm sure I'm right there with you with Frank DeBoer kind of knowing that's coming and being ready for it and dealing with it and preparing his players at halftime to – the sub is going to happen sometime in the first 15 minutes of the second half. When it happens, they're going to go to 4-2-3-1. That's when you can really focus on working possession and grind them down, because they don't have the legs to chase you all night. And it worked. Today, Frank DeBoer spoke to the media today, and he said, look, I think Pozuelo is going to play as a false nine. We're ready for it. We're prepared. I think he's done a really good job this season of preparing his team for these moments. And this time of year, to have a manager like DeBoer, who is so focused on what he knows what his group can do now, but knowing what the opposition is going to present to him, that's another level of preparation that we haven't seen in this league very often. A lot of times it's been teams do what they do and that's it. Atlanta United will mix it up and do what makes sense for the match.
And that's what I like about Frank, actually, because he will change things up if he needs to do it. And nine times out of ten, it will happen, because I like what I've seen from him and how he's adjusted to this league, to MLS. Because as you've seen it, I've seen it, whether it's an American coach or it's a European coach who assumes, oh, I can get away with this, I can get away with that. And then they lose the 3 points, because in any game, it's not true that you're going to dominate like you think you will. And I like what Frank DeBoer does. And let me ask you this. Do you believe, and this is nothing against Tata Martino, because he did what he had to do. He did what he had to do to go out and get Atlanta United its first ever title and give the city its first ever title since the last time that the Atlanta Braves won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that, you know, Frank, because he changes things up, do you think that he is more of a tinkerer and that Tata Martino is more of, I'm just going to keep it the way it is and just ram it down their throats?
I think they're very different. I think they actually come at the game from a very similar place. I think there's a lot of similarities in what they want to do ultimately. But I think Frank, I wouldn't call it tinkering, but Frank will focus more on what the opposition does and prepare his team to break down what the opposition is going to do, knowing what his squad is capable of, whereas Tata was more about, this is how we play, and I want to make them adjust to us, before that postseason run last year, where Tata did change everything about the way they played. And ultimately, it was the same thing. It was still, we're going to make them adjust to us. We've just adjusted in a completely different way. DeBoer will come out in a 3-5-2 one time. He'll come out in a 4-3-3 one time. He'll mix and match. He'll give teams a different personality. Sometimes it looks more like a 3-4-2-1 with Pity Martinez and Ezequiel Barco together behind Joseph Martinez. Other times it'll be Emerson Hyndman, who's more connected to the midfield, and it's more of a true midfield three. He'll make the right adjustments in matches too, and we saw it against the Revolution in the first round, where he went to the 4-3-3 when he brought on Villalba and Pogba in the second half, and it turned the game. So he's just more – I think Frank is more focused on how he can exploit weaknesses in the opposition, whereas Tata was more focused on accentuating what his team did well.
Right. Yeah. No, I can see that. I can definitely see that. And, you know, once again, I think Frank has done a great job so far. And now he's got another round to go. And then, obviously, depending on what the Western Conference Final does, you know, there could be a trip to Los Angeles, or there could be a home, you know, you're hosting the final again. So that's going to be interesting to see. So what scares you about Toronto right now? Because some are saying this should not be happening. Looks like Greg Vanney is turning into another great playoff performance so far. What is it about Toronto right now that, you know, does it make you a little nervous that Atlanta might get a wrinkle against them? Do you think Vanney could, you know, find a way to out-duel Frank? What do you see in this final right now that's going to be over at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Wednesday night?
I don't know if Toronto has a different way of playing than we've seen in the postseason. It's been the 4-3-3, but it's been Pozuelo as a false nine. And in the second half against NYC, because he was playing as a false nine, it played more like a 4-4-2 diamond because he's dropping deeper in. And it's such a narrow field that your wide forwards aren't that wide to begin with. He just got a little more connected to the midfield. The things that worry me about Toronto, Pozuelo in that role, because it's very free, it's very unique, it's not something you see that often. So it's something that will take some preparation for. And then the communication for Atlanta has to be sharp between Gonzalez Pires, between Lorenowitz, if he's either in the back or in the defensive midfield. Michael Parkhurst returned to training. We'll see if he's going to be available to start on Wednesday. It hasn't been ruled out. The communication and when Pozuelo drops off of that front line is going to have to be key. I think Toronto's midfield three is outstanding. Bradley, Osorio, Delgado, really very well connected, on the same page. They can all do the other one's jobs. So they're very interchangeable. And Toronto, how fluid they are, is definitely a concern for a team like Atlanta. I think it's the same things that Atlanta has to focus on that they generally do at home. You need that early goal. You need to make it difficult for the opposition to get comfortable. And I think the fan base has a big part of that. An early goal really gets things on the right foot early and forces Toronto to open up more than they want to. I mean, they haven't lost in 12. They've drawn six of those, but they've only got one clean sheet in that 12. They haven't been a real lockdown defensive kind of team. If they have to come out and play a little bit more, I think that plays into Atlanta's hands, and an early goal can make that happen.
Let me ask you this. Do you think having Jeff Laurentiewicz maybe coming off as a sub gives Atlanta that advantage?
I think Laurinowicz has become such a key part of this team at the end of the season. I mean, he's not playing like his age. He's fairly well rested because he didn't play a ton of minutes during the season. And he gives you a player who can play in the midfield, but also drop into the back line, either short term in a match, just because you're under a lot of pressure, or to go to a line of five, which is how they closed out both of the last two matches in the postseason. So I think Laurinowicz is critical, and it's come at the expense of Eric Rometty, who has been a very good player for this team over the last couple of years. But Laurinowicz is a little more defensively responsible and a little more versatile in those different roles, and he's been vital to this team's success with two clean sheets in the postseason.
Isn't it funny how, regardless of what happens with Atlanta, whether they're going to win or lose against Toronto, isn't it funny how Frank got crucified before the season got started, and now you have a Campeones Cup, you have an Open Cup, and you have an opportunity to get back into the MLS Cup championship match? What does that say about how Frank has handled himself with all the fire and the finger pointing by the dedicated Atlanta United supporters throwing it right at him?
He's been great. I mean, he gets it. He's been through it, obviously, at his last two stops, and he went through it at Ajax as well. I mean, you know, he won four league titles there, but it wasn't all sunshine and roses. You know, you have difficult times anywhere you're at, and he knows how to handle that. I like that he has really tried to find the best way to play with the team that he has this season. Because the hardest thing in his situation, I think it was maybe the hardest job for a new manager coming into the league, because it wasn't like he was coming into a bad team that needed to completely change everything over. He was coming into a champion. So it's like, how much do you want to change? But knowing that Tata Martino fought for 2 years to make this team better defensively and really couldn't figure out the best way to do that with the attacking mentality that they had. I think Frank has probably found the best balance of that in Atlanta's time. I mean, this is a team that can score goals, and you always fear Joseph Martinez or Julian Gressel getting forward and scoring goals. But it's also a team that hasn't given up very many. I mean, defensively in the second half of the season, they've been outstanding. In the postseason, they've been even better. They've kind of hit the best of both worlds right now. And that's a big credit to Frank DeBoer and the job he's done in Atlanta this year.
Absolutely. All right, Jason, take care. Have a good night. Thank you again. And hopefully talk to you later this week. Have a good night and good luck on Wednesday.
Thanks for having me on. Always fun.
Always fun as well. Thanks a lot. Jason Longshore, 92.9 FM, The Game, radio analyst of Atlanta United, and now joining me over from the great state of Washington in Seattle, the Sounders taking care of business, defeating Real Salt Lake by a final of 2-0. Once again, Mr. Mickey Turner joins me. And Mickey, got to say it, even though Salt Lake probably gave some issues, Seattle found the way to take care of business. And they get 2 in the second half, and you're on to the Western Conference Final and a trip to Southern California.
Yeah, good evening. It's good to be back with you. Just talking briefly about the RSL game. I was at the game, obviously, watched it, and was not as impressed while I was actually watching the game. But upon replay, it was much more comprehensive than I initially thought, and probably didn't give the Sounders as much credit as they deserved. While RSL had the lion's share of possession in the game, they rarely threatened the Sounders' goals, and the Sounders actually had most of the chances in the first half. And by the second half, the Sounders were pretty firmly in control of the game. Once they got the goal from Svensson on the corner from Nico, at that point, it was pretty much all over, because RSL really hadn't shown that they were going to be able to threaten the Sounders seriously or consistently at that point. And then obviously getting the second goal pretty much closed the door on the game.
You know, the one thing about this game that was really surprised that Jordan Morris did not score. I mean, obviously he had chances, but you know, obviously this is Nick Raimondo we're talking about here. You know, Nick Raimondo, legend of the game, has had a great career. DC United, originally with the Miami Fusion, the old MLS Miami side, Real Salt Lake. You know, just finding ways to just pull a save out of his backside. You know, and what was it like to see? Not to say, well, thank God he's done, but, you know, a great career he had and a very tough goalkeeper in this league and a legend of this league as well.
Yeah, I think the talk from the Sounders ahead of the game was mostly about how they were going to get one past Raimondo, because he's been a thorn in the Sounders side for many years, basically since they've been in the league. I think we may have talked last week about the 2011 Sounders Salt Lake two-legged playoff series where the Sounders got killed 3-0 in the first leg, scored 2 in the second leg, and then Raimondo basically stood at his head for the rest of the game, and they couldn't get anything past him. And they had a rematch back in 2012 where it was 0-0, and it took a Mario Martinez wonder goal to get them past Salt Lake in that series. So the Sounders and RSL have a history in the playoffs. Raimondo certainly has had a history with the Sounders doing what he's done over the course of the years, and he was fantastic in this game as well. The game probably should have been 4-5 to the Sounders if it weren't for Raimondo making some incredible saves. He had a great save on a Christian Roldan header off a corner. He saved an own goal. He saved a Victor Rodriguez goal. He's threw on goal, and Raimondo managed to save that. So he's just been a fantastic keeper. And as you said, you know, you're not happy to see him go, but you're probably happy not to have to see him anymore.
Exactly. Believe me, watching him go against the New York Red Bulls, I've had my fair share of moments, you know. Yeah, I got to be professional, but you still have to curse his name because how'd you do that? How do you say these types of things? And he finds a way. He's such an athletic keeper. He just finds a way to stop you.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's, as everyone knows, he's listed at about 5'9", 5'10", and that's probably a bit generous in actuality, which makes that makes what he's done over the course of his career and how he's had that longevity as well and been a fixture on the national team, even if he didn't, he was never the starter. It just makes it all the more impressive.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we got to give him credit for going out there and performing at the best of his abilities because he was such an athletic keeper, even though, you know, short in stature, but always big in heart, that, as they always say in the business. And, you know, he was, you know, one of the best goalkeepers in this league. And now, finally, he's called it quits. We can now take a breath.
Yeah.
Abzio. That opening goal in the second half, Gustav Svensson, great job by Lodero to find him and then puts that ball away in the 64th minute. What was it about that goal that really, I would say, turned the game around? Because we'll get to the stats in a moment, but that goal was just absolutely fantastic from Svensson.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you said, it was in the 64th minute, so there was not that much of the game left of regulation time, that is. And so it was beginning to seem like it was going to be one of those games where Armando stands on his head and makes it so, you know, one of the teams is going to need some type of incredible wonder goal in the last few minutes of the game or extra time or even worse, going to penalties, which is certainly something the Sounders did not want. They said as much after the game that they wanted no part of Raimondo in a penalty shootout situation to try to advance, especially given their history in penalty shootouts, which is mixed to say the least. They obviously won the MLS Cup on penalties, but they lost to Dallas and Portland in penalty shootouts in the playoffs. So that was, I think, the main response was a sigh of relief that they had finally breached Raimondo's net. And at that point, as we said, the Sounders were in control of the game, but, you know, with the score tied at zeros, you know, it just takes one, you know, one bad bounce, a wonder shot, you know, deflection, and then you're down 1-0, even though you've dominated good portions of the game. So I would say relief was the main response to them finally getting the goal, which was a good goal, obviously, by Gustav, a great header off a corner from Nico, which, you know, Nico gets a bit of stick for his corners, you know, not, you know, making it over the first man or just, you know, not being accurate or dangerous generally. So I'm sure it was good for him to get one of those to go in. It was just, a great play all around by the Sounders.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, Lodero converts one himself to make it 2-0 towards the back end of the second half, and off you go into the Western Conference Final. What has Schmetzer done this year that has turned things around for the Sounders? Obviously, last year was a good year, but not good enough. As we already told and said, Jordan Morris out for the entire year because of that injury he suffered in the CONCACAF Champions League down in El Salvador. And you know, what has Schmetzer done that you can say, well, obviously Bob Bradley got Head Coach of the Year award, but still, though, I don't know if Schmetzer was in the running for it, but what has he done that has changed things up for the Sounders so far in this run in the playoffs?
Yeah, so just speaking on a macro, overall level, he has said that this has been one of the most challenging years he's had as a manager of the team, which has only been, let's all keep in mind, since 2016, halfway through 2016 at that, when he took over for Ziggy Schmidt, who got fired halfway through that season when they went on to then win MLS Cup. But it's been challenging, even though they got off to a fantastic start. I believe they were 5-1-1 out of the gate. And then the injuries and the international call-ups began, and basically the entire summer was reminiscent of their previous starts to the year, where they were terrible for, you know, until June, and then would finally turn it on. This year they were good until April or early May, and then were just not very good at all. Although not as bad as they had been in those dire stretches in previous years over this summer. And it was just I think it was just for his perspective, it was just a lot of players coming in and out, a lot of injuries, and then the international call-up just really decimated the team. They were starting at certain points, a couple of 17-year-olds, a 16-year-old in Danny Leyva, 17-year-old in Alfonso Campo Chavez. They got a couple of starts because they just had nobody else who was available to play. And then, they managed to get through, the injuries. And Victor Rodriguez came back a little bit, then got injured again. And so they haven't had him for large stretches of the season. And so I think it's just been a combination of all of those things that has made it, in his eyes, just very difficult. And that being said, they still finished second place in the Western Conference and fourth overall, and still have a chance to host MLS Cup if they're able to get past LA and Toronto does them a favor. So overall, it has to be said at this point, the season would probably be quantified as a success, because you're going down to LA with a chance to beat the most dominant team in MLS history. And so even if you don't win that game, it's not as if you were expected to win, really. They're pretty clearly not favored to win. So I think, either way, unless it ends up in some type of horrible rout of a game, they can leave that game with their heads held high and would call it a successful season.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. That's going to be a big challenge, obviously, and take on LAFC. What else do you have to be aware of with LAFC? We know Vela. We know Adama Diomande. We know about Daniel Rossi. We know about, that potent attack, some solid defensive players. Do you feel maybe the goalkeeping position is a bit of a weakness for this LAFC side? Because, Carr was not supposed to be the one to be the starting goalkeeper for LAFC. And now, he grew into the position last year. And do you feel maybe he's...
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
Oh. Okay, yeah. The goalkeeping position. So I would say, Tyler Miller obviously is well familiar to Sounders fans. He was drafted by the Sounders, played for them for about a year and a half, I want to say. Got a playoff appearance start against Houston and had a shutout in that 2017 run to the MLS Cup final, which they ended up losing. But was very highly thought of out here. But, of course, the Sounders have Stephen Fry. And by the time Fry was going to be ready to retire, Miller was probably, he was not going to sit around for the next 4 years just be an understudy when he needed to get playing time. So the Sounders and LAFC worked out a trade. And so the Sounders are well acquainted with him. Miller has gotten the best of the Sounders in his appearances so far. The Sounders are going to be itching to try to get some stuff past him. And then you talked about his kind of – his uncertainty between the pipes, but that's mostly related to Zlatan being in his head and, banging Galazzo's every time they meet up. Otherwise, he's been a pretty good keeper. So it's going to be if there's a weakness or a place where the Sounders have a clear advantage, it's pretty clearly there with Fry over Miller. I think the Sounders are going to have to get to Miller first. And that means getting through LAFC's defense, which, if Mark Anthony Kay is not available, becomes slightly easier. And it should be said that LAFC defensively was nothing to write home about against LA Galaxy last week. They gave up three goals, and at points were clinching their backsides. As LA kept coming back in that game. So the Sounders have to think that they're going to be able to get some opportunities, especially if Kay's not in there. And they just need to the problem is obviously going to be, you know, stopping LAFC's potent attack because, yeah, sure, LAFC gave up 3 goals, but they scored 5. So,
right. Exactly. That's the one worry you have there. All right. Well, listen, Mickey, thank you very much, and good luck against LAFC on tomorrow night, Tuesday night. And this is going to be a big matchup. This is all for the marbles to get to the MLS Cup Championship.
Yeah, well, we'll see if the game actually goes off because there is some late-breaking stuff with all the wildfires and air quality out there. Jeff Carlisle is reporting that MLS is monitoring the situation, so it is entirely possible that game gets postponed or rescheduled. So we may be holding off for a couple of days on that. So stay tuned to the weather forecast and such.
No, absolutely. Let's hope that the match does get underway, and hopefully they can put out those scary wildfires. But listen, Mickey, thank you again. Have a good night. And I'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later. Mickey Turner joining us, also SB Nation colleague of Sounder at Heart. And let's not also forget a good lawyer in the workings in soccer. So that's a good guy right there to have, as always. And just keep abreast of what he does at Turner Esquire, ESQ, on Twitter, at Turner ESQ. She couldn't come on live with us tonight. But that's okay. We recorded this segment last night. The managing editor of Angels on Parade of SB Nation, my other SB Nation colleague, in Alicia Rodriguez, as finally, LAFC defeating the LA Galaxy in the playoffs this time, not in the regular season match, but defeating the Galaxy and moving on to the conference finals. As they're going to host the Seattle Sounders at Bank of California Stadium. And once again, here she is, Alicia Rodriguez.
Neil Feuerstein, the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, as we continue to recap the 2019 MLS Cup playoffs. Very exciting conference semifinal matchup, the Battle of Los Angeles, as they call it, El Tráfico, between LAFC and the LA Galaxy. And to talk about this big matchup is, of course, the head executive producer of Angels on Parade. Alicia Rodriguez joins us, of course, my SB Nation colleague. A 5-3 victory by LAFC, the current Supporters Shield holders. Alicia, welcome back. How are you, and how is the night so far?
Hey, hi, thanks for having me on. Things are good, and no complaints on my side.
Absolutely not. I mean, it had to be the biggest headache to take on the LA Galaxy, to play them 5 times, 3 times in their first year, and of course twice this year, and to either get a draw or a loss against this Galaxy side, it probably was infuriating to every single LAFC supporter that they couldn't get the full 3 points. But the first ever playoff match against each other, and you know, finally you defeat the Galaxy.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. It's one of those situations where it's high risk, high reward, right, in the playoffs, because if the Galaxy had knocked out LAFC, you know, it would have been something that would have, the elephant in the room would have kept on growing, so to speak. But instead, you know, maybe this was something that could exorcise the demon, so to speak, for LAFC, you know, having that big victory, the first one, so sweet, coming finally in the playoffs. Hopefully that, you know, helps them push on, and maybe now with the rivalry moving forward, it'll be a little more even between the teams.
No, absolutely. I mean, how many times I can remember the New York Red Bulls sweeping New York City FC in their first year about 5 years ago. Then, of course, starting the next season, the 7-0 win at Yankee Stadium until finally New York City FC gets that first win over the Red Bulls.
Yeah, exactly. It might be the penance of the second team in the given city, right? Like they need to pay up for a bit before they can get back into the rivalry. I'm not sure, but you know, maybe there's something there.
Yep, absolutely. But still, though, this is probably a bigger match in the regular season. But we'll see what happens next year, and we won't worry about that right now. Carlos Vela has been very huge for LAFC last year. This year now, of course, he takes over the regular season goal record this season, and he scores 2 big goals in the first half, and that probably put, you know, the place jumping when he converted his brace in the 40th minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that LAFC has been in need of is somebody to set the tone for them, especially in these rivalry games. And he's been somebody who's been able to bring the team and kind of drag them along at certain times. And I think the energy was really good on Thursday. I think LAFC kind of matched up in terms of intensity and quality of play overall. But to have that game-changing player able to set the tone early, I think really kind of set them on the path. You know, there were a couple of bumps along the way, but I think that set them on the path to actually, head in a direction to end up winning.
But how scary was it when Zlatan converts his equalizer? I know Christian Pavon made it 2-1 before first half stoppage time, but still, Zlatan probably put a lot of fear back into Bank of California Stadium when he leveled the score at 2.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think one of the things that sort of compounded it was, in this particular case, it wasn't a Zlatan golazo, you know, something where only he can do this amazing skill. And, you know, if you're the goalkeeper, you kind of throw your hands up and say, well, what am I going to do in this situation? In this particular one, it was Tyler Miller making kind of a big mistake after a couple of teammates made mistakes in the build-up to give him the opportunity. So that was something that was really concerning. And from my perspective watching the game, at halftime I thought that LAFC was playing really well. They certainly didn't have the game wrapped up at that point, but I thought that they were in really good shape. And I was asking LAFC fans, you know, how do you feel about the first half? And almost to a person, they were, I'm so nervous, I'm so scared, I don't, you know. Even when they were ahead 2-1, the fans still didn't quite trust that they could get the job done. And certainly when Zlatan scored, it was like, here we go again. Is it all going to fall apart once more? But this time it didn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But relief came back. Diego Rossi gets a great chance. He puts the ball away in the 66th minute. That made it 3-2. The place was jumping again. And, of course, Adama Diomande makes it 4-2. A lot of, you know, you'd say relaxed and relieved LAFC fans thinking to themselves, finally, now we're going to hold this lead and we're going to go forward.
Well, yeah, and then the Galaxy did score again, but luckily Diomande scored again too. So, it was really nice on a lot of levels. Obviously, Vela's play was fantastic. Rossi did a great job in getting that go-ahead goal, and then he set up Diomande's first, and then Diomande basically by himself scored the last goal of the night to ice the result. And he's had a difficult past few months. He had to step away from the team for a while to take care of some personal business, and this was his first game back. So, you know, you never quite know what to expect for a player who needed to get into a different frame of mind and take care of some personal issues and has been away for a little while. You never know how it's going to turn out, but he was really hungry and ready for the moment, and he said after the game that he was clear-minded and really focused on going after MLS Cup, and, you know, based on the performance that he put together, you have to think that he's in a good spot now, and that's good to see on a lot of levels.
And obviously this is a 5-3 victory for LAFC. If I can ask you this, what was the buildup before the opening whistle? Was there, you know, the fans, were they thinking, okay, this is our time, we're finally going to get the Galaxy, or was there some sort of intrepidation, you know, we don't know what we're going to get, we've had leads that we've lost, either we lose 2 points, we've lost all 3 points. What was the feeling in the building before the match began?
I definitely think it was a mix of those emotions. I think a lot of people thought this is the best time to get that first win. So, you know, in the playoffs and to knock the Galaxy out while advancing, that would be so, so sweet. But there were a lot of people who were pretty nervous. I think, coming in and trying to decide whether it would be better for LAFC to play the Galaxy or Minnesota, you know, it was a mixed answer, but I would wager that probably the majority of fans probably wanted to face Minnesota because at least it wouldn't have kind of that mental baggage attached to it. But like I said, it was high risk, high reward, and in this particular instance, it came out as a big reward for LAFC.
Absolutely, and now you're going to move on to take on the Seattle Sounders. You'll be hosting the match, again, as the Porter Shield winners. And if you do defeat the Sounders, you're going to move on to the final and host it there. But what is it about Seattle right now that gives you either confidence or worry when you're going to take on the Sounders that looks like they're like high-powered and ready to go? And, of course, Jordan Morris is a man that's possessed right now who's scoring goals like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is that LAFC are undefeated all time against the Sounders, but then again, you know, based on what we just talked about with the all-time series against the Galaxy, that may not be any benefit whatsoever to LAFC. I do think that the Sounders are probably in much better form than LAFC have ever faced them in, and so, you know, it's going to be tricky. There's a part of me that thinks that it could be all downhill from here for LAFC. You know, they've gotten past potentially the biggest hurdle in their playoffs already in taking care of that game against the Galaxy. Of course, then again, there's a risk that they may relax too much and, you know, open the door for the Sounders to come in and, you know, put an upset and shock them too. So, you know, we'll have to see how it turns out, but you have to think based on kind of the matchups and the previous history, LAFC are certainly worthy favorites, but, you know, they certainly can't rest on their laurels at this point. I think the Sounders are getting stronger every round, and it should be a really good game.
What's your opinions about Bob Bradley? Obviously won Coach of the Year this year. When he took over in 1998, the Chicago Fire, they won their very first MLS Cup in their expansion year. Obviously, this is year two for LAFC, but, you know, is there a growing confidence that Bob Bradley still has the goods, that he might bring a title to LAFC in their second season?
Yeah, I mean, you have to say at this point, if LAFC weren't to win MLS Cup, it would be a little bit disappointing at the very least. I think for me, as we've been watching the team really closely, what I find really striking is that LAFC basically has the same starting 11 as they had last year. They only have two players different, really. And basically every player who returned who's played major minutes, you know, the last two seasons, over the, you know, the past two seasons, they've improved. And how often do you see a coach capable of taking a group of players from one season to another and improving them so substantially that, you know, pretty much you can, to a man, you can look at every single player and say, he's gotten better. That guy's had a career year. You know, he's really upped his game, so on and so forth. And in that regard, you know, along with the results, obviously, but I think that the fact that all of these players are collectively getting better, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer that Bob Bradley's been doing a fantastic job, and he deserved Coach of the Year, and that's why, you know, they're expected to win MLS Cup at this point.
What's your opinion about the new playoff system? All these one-and-done games, no longer goal aggregate series, and they're all in between the international breaks of October and November. What's your opinion? Do you like it? You dislike it? A lot of excitement. I mean, at least you've had 4 days to digest all these games, including LAFC's victory over the Galaxy. What's your opinion about the new playoff system and the format?
I think so far so good. I mean, obviously, I think any time they change the format, there's going to be maybe some unintended consequences or unforeseen results from it. I think one of the things that we'll have to see is if the bye for the top seed will remain intact, or if the timing on that will change a little bit. We saw NYCFC come out really flat in their game, and they got knocked off, and, you know, LAFC did advance, so we'll see if that, you know, makes a difference. And then I think so far it seems to have produced some really exciting games, and mostly the higher seeds going through, or the lower seeds going through, which I think is more or less what most people are looking for beyond whatever their team is doing. But I think one concern is, you know, if we get a year where the seventh seed you know, flukes its way to winning MLS Cup and, you know, doesn't really, like, bulldoze anyone, but produces, you know, several really fluky results to win the title. You know, that might be something that people down the line will say, okay, that's not really fair. I don't know if I like that. But, I mean, in the middle of the first year of it, it seems like it's producing exciting games, and I think that's something that a lot of people wanted. So far, so good.
Are you surprised at how many goals have been scored in about maybe, I would say, a little more than half of these playoff matches? Obviously, Dallas, Seattle, Red Bulls, and Philly, and the LA game. I mean, that's a lot of goals that I never expected.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, like, if there were two-legged series, you'd see most likely one of the games would be kind of grinded out. Let's get to, you know, halftime of the series, nil-nil, or keep it 1-0, that kind of thing. Much more tactical. And, you know, when it's 90 minutes or 120 minutes, these teams are kind of leaving caution to the wind. You have to just kind of throw it all out there in one game. So I'm not necessarily surprised that it's so high, you know, there's more goals. Maybe a little bit surprised it's so high scoring. Like the LA game was, I think, tied for the highest scoring playoff game in league history. So, you know, it's not something we see every day, but I think most of us would prefer to see that than to see a bunch of, you know, nil-nils with penalty shootouts and, you know, not a lot of action during the game. I think I personally would rather see the goals, and I'm guessing most folks would.
Yep, absolutely. Alicia, thank you very much for your time. Good luck in the Western Conference Final hosting the Sounders, and hope to get you back on next week, or at least next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And that's Alicia Rodriguez of Angels on Parade, my SB Nation colleague, as LAFC defeat for the first time ever the LA Galaxy by a final of 5-3. So here is the schedule now for, of course, the big conference finals in Major League Soccer, as of right now, on October 29th, tomorrow night, this coming Tuesday night, LAFC will host the Seattle Sounders at the Bank of California Stadium, and that will be on ESPN at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Pacific. And then on Wednesday, October the 30th, Atlanta United hosting Toronto FC at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. That will be on Fox Sports 1. Tomorrow night will be John Champion and Taylor Twellman on ESPN. And that's on Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday night, John Strong and Stu Holden for Fox Sports 1. And then the final match, will be on November the 10th. And that will be on ABC. MLS back on ABC. That is going to be something pretty interesting. We'll have to wait and watch what's going to happen there. But other than that, some pretty good playoffs so far. It's been exciting. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed them. I really have. I've enjoyed them. I've watched them. There's nothing wrong with it at all. I've been enjoying all these games so far with all the scoring and everything. You know, they're all going for it. And that's what you want to see. Have them go for it. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. And once again, it's going to be very interesting to watch. And we're going to have to wait and see who's going to move on to the MLS Cup Championship. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen there. Before we say goodbye, we have to inform you of the third round of qualifying for Sorry about that. Didn't know that was going to happen. And all I can say is that hopefully this doesn't happen again. My Skype conked out on me, so... all we can say is that this doesn't happen again. Now, let's go now to the third round of qualifying. The schedule is already set up. Matches will be played on Saturday, November the 23rd, and Sunday, November the 24th. In the East region. In the East region, as we get ready for these games. On Sunday, November 24th, Vereeniging Eerste-Bridge. They will be hosting West Chester United over at the Vereeniging Eerste-Bridge Clubhouse, Field 1 in Warminster, Pennsylvania at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Christos FC from Maryland will take on Steel FC from Pennsylvania at the North County High School in Glen Burnie, Maryland. Club Deportivo Juarez from Virginia taking on Virginia United at the Howison Homestead Soccer Complex field, to be determined what field number, over in Woodbridge, Virginia. And then, of course, at the moment, to be determined of the date and the time and the venue, Brockton FC United of Massachusetts taking on the New York Pancipian Freedoms from Queens, New York. Central region, first things first. We have to wait for the Soda City Sorenex FC Georgia Revolution FC Reserves match to get underway. That match has not been played yet, so we're waiting for that result in the central region of the central region of Open Cup qualifying. Whoever wins will host Nashville United in the third round on November the 23rd. So until we get a winner there, venue at the moment, we won't inform you. There's a choice, obviously, of where it's going to be played by the winner of that particular match, as Nashville United will be on the road. But Miami United FC, their under-23 side, will be hosting Hurricane FC at the Kendall Soccer Park in Miami, Florida, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday, November 23rd, as well as Louisiana Crew, K-R-E-W-E-F-C, of Louisiana, taking on hosting Livonia City FC from Michigan. That will be at the St. Thomas More Catholic High School in Lafayette, Louisiana, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. North Texas Rayados will be taking on Celtic Cowboys Premier. That'll be at the Premier Park, Field Number 1 in Balch Springs, Texas. And then finally, in the West region, at the moment, no date, no time, but Azteca FC of Colorado will host Olympic Club of California. And on November the 23rd, Chula Vista FC will be hosting LA Monsters FC at Terra Nova Park in Chula Vista, California. Oxnard Guerreros FC will be hosting Cal FC, and that will be at Del Sol Stadium in Oxnard, California, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And finally, in the Mountain region, 1 p.m. Mountain, 3 p.m. Eastern, FC Boulder Harpos will be taking on hosting Colorado Rovers. And it looks like the Trojans, SC Trojans, have either forfeited the match. So that allowed LA Monsters to have to, let me just double check to make sure that that matchup does have a result, just so you know, because I didn't get a chance to look if there was a result or not in this one. So we're just going to go ahead and take a look here. because we want to make sure that, you know, we have correct information here just to make sure that this match was played. And, yep, it was played. LA Monsters did defeat the SC Trojans by a final of 4-1. So LA Monsters are and have advanced into officially the match was played into the second round. So once again, LA Monsters, the visitors, defeating SC Trojan 4-1. And now we are waiting for this matchup between Georgia Revolution FC and Soda City Sorenex FC. That match will be played on Saturday, November the 2nd. So that's going to be exciting. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I cannot wait to see what's going to happen there. It should be a fun time, and I cannot wait to go there and check it out. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this will do it for tonight's show, for the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. I want to thank my guests for tonight. I want to thank Dwayne Rollins, 24th Minute Blog, Sports Podcasting Network, as well as Soccer Today Show with Kevin Laramie. I also want to thank Jason Longshore from 92.9 FM The Game. I also want to thank Mickey Turner from Sounder at Heart, my SB Nation colleague, as well as Alicia Rodriguez, Angels on Parade, my other SB Nation colleague. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. This Friday night will be the conference finals review show. And then next week, we will have a regular show, and we will be discussing, hopefully, some USL championship playoffs. And we'll hope to get some good guests on for you tonight so we can have a conversation, because there's a lot of things going on right now that needs to be discussed, and hopefully we'll get ready for some fun here, and we'll have a lot of fun. So my name once again is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Take care. So long, and bye-bye for now. Have a good night, everybody, and take care.